All right, we might be heading on the short music on the short break. Let me see if we have a short break somewhere here. But good morning to you. Welcome to Realm of the Historics. This is a program in which we look at everything, and we are following geopolitical events that are manifolding in our midst. So before we start, let me set my house in order. Let me set my house in order.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Shombe. And this is the time that we discuss about business, economics, and everything which is happening around us, particularly everything that is related to bread and butter. Yeah, it's 18th of November, 2025.
Alright, we come back and we are now looking at the political events that are, you know, showing off, like very, very, you know, unpredictable international events that are manifolding. And of course, today is the 22nd of November, where we are supposed to have the G20 meeting, G20 summit. We have a problem. We have a problem, and that is we have some hope that the Ukraine-Russia conflict will end through a negotiated, you know, peace, you know, kind of plan. Diplomacy is given a chance, and America is at the forefront to make sure that the war ends. So America is at the forefront to make sure the war ends, because America has been at the forefront to make sure that the war starts in 2021, and under the Biden administration, especially the Biden administration, really worked hard to make sure that the Russia-America relations was, you know, were at a very lowest level, you know, at a very lowest level in history. We were almost at the brink of a nuclear confrontation between Russia and the United States. And this is what Trump calls foolishness, the recklessness of, you know, Joe Biden. And Trump calls this a stupid war, that this stupid war would never have taken place if I were the president. So now Trump is trying to prove that by orchestrating peace plans. There were a lot of peace plans that were drafted, but it seems that this 28-point peace plan might work if both sides agree to it, because it takes Ukraine, it takes Russia to agree, and then the war ends. Now, Trump is saying, look, we don't need to only talk about Russia when it comes to the war. We also need to talk about Ukraine, because it takes two to tangle. Trump argues that it was the recklessness of Zelensky that led to the war. And he says that you can't fight a war with somebody that is 15 times or 20 times bigger than you, and you expect to win. That's just not logical. You know, but there are people in Europe like Kaja Kallas, that woman, two women in fact, Kaja Kallas and Ursula von der Leyen, and then Joseph Borrell, and others, that feel that Ukraine must just continue to fight. Donald Tusk of Poland, and of course Keir Starmer of Britain, and Emmanuel Macron, they feel like Ukraine must be strong. So they feel like Ukraine must be strong. They want a stronger Ukraine. Ukraine must have a negotiating card, must have an upper hand. But how will Ukraine have an upper hand if the military of Ukraine is being, you know, is being destroyed? Ukraine is losing men on the battlefield. How does Ukraine become, you know, how does Ukraine have an upper hand? Because if You know, if the war was negotiated to have ended in March 2022, Ukraine would not even have lost a single territory. The Russians would have withdrawn and they would have gone. But it was Boris Johnson and it was Joe Biden that, you know, convinced Zelensky to say, no, look, you must fight. You must fight. So, all these guys, Rastan Umirov of Ukraine and Andrei Yermak, they were agreeing to say, okay, let's drop this idea of joining NATO and let's at least make peace. And they were about to make peace. But, well, Mr. Boris said, we are giving you $20 billion. And Mr. Biden say another $30 billion to Ukraine. So Ukraine was the most funded. There is the Ukrainian war was the most funded war. There is no war in the world that was the most funded like Ukraine war. Because the aim was to defeat Russia. And when you look at the sanctions, there are almost 6,000 sanctions. And now the U.S., according to Bloomberg and New York Times, according to Politico and Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, of course, they are even saying now there are no more ideas. They have run out of ideas on how to sanction Russia. So Russia is a country that is over-sanctioned, bypassing North Korea, Zimbabwe, Cuba, Iran, and so forth. So Russia was the most country that, is a country that was the most sanctioned in the world. That the aim was to defeat Russia economically and to bring them on their knees for them to negotiate. The Russians would be the one to say, okay, let's negotiate. But the plan did not work. So the plan did not work. The Russians seem to have been preparing for this confrontation. And they put measures and mechanisms on how to stabilize the economy and to shield the economy from sanctions. Of course, the sanctions were biting and are still biting, but they don't have teeth enough to bog the Russians down. So, you know, when you compare the Ukrainian war when it comes to media narrative, the Ukrainian war is like the COVID-19. COVID-19 was the most protected disease. Was the most protected pandemic. Because if you say something about COVID-19, you will be blocked by Facebook, by Google, by YouTube, by every of this, you know, social media, companies. They'll block you just to say, if you say something against the vaccine or about the vaccine, you know, everything that was said to be conspiracies, that they are conspiracies, turned out to be true. You know, about the vaccine and about the origin of COVID-19. But it used to be buried under, you know, until even the document that we used to download, that used to be readily available, that New World Order. You know, you remember that document, the New World Order? Those documents were deleted from Google. They were deleted from Google because that was a time for pharmaceutical company and big pharma to shine. You know, that was a time for Big Pharma to shine. And then the military industrial complex found out that they are not making money, because now it's about the vaccine and it's about the jab. You know, take the jab, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, you know, Pfizer, BioNTech. And then, of course, the Russians came up with their own Sputnik. And later on, we heard that apparently it has the capacity to spread HIV. A lot of stuff that was said. So when it comes to the narrative, to the media narrative, when it comes to media war, when it comes to the propaganda war using the media machine, there is no country that can beat the West in that. In fact, if America, just to be specific, because even BBC cannot challenge America on that. In fact, BBC is going down now. They had an embarrassing, you know, end of the year, because the two major, you know, directors quit because of the, you know, Trump insurrection story that was cooked up. They made up a story. They just put clips together and they came up with a documentary, you know, making it as if Trump ordered people to go and fight. Let's go and fight like hell and all those things. Or to come out, just things turning out, it was not true. And now they are facing a lawsuit of $1 billion. Excuse me. They are facing penalty of $1 billion. They are facing penalties of $1 billion. So Trump is trying to sue them, because they defamed him. They tarnished his image. And Trump was even removed from Twitter. His Facebook account was closed. So he was one of the presidents in the United States of America's history, the most humiliated president, in fact, by the Biden administration and so forth. So just starting from the 2016 election, and in 2017, the Obama administration, you know, sanctioned Russia, accusing Russia of colluding with the U.S. elections, and investigations were launched, and they found out that it was not true, but the CIA was pressured, or some people in the CIA, you know, came up with a hoax to implicate Trump that his elections were rigged and so forth. So Trump was the most humiliated, you know, president so far in 50 years. Yeah. Because 50 years period is our time. That's our generation. In 40 years from the 1980s up since the 1980s to date. So that's our generation. So when it comes to fighting a media war or propaganda war, the United States of America is the best, because they have invested money in cable networks, you know, in mainstream media. The media in United States is the most lucrative market of all. I mean, it's the United States is a big country of 400 million, almost 400 or 500 million now. So it will be a lucrative market. where, you know, media, the media is sponsored to push a certain narrative. The media is very much lucrative. Now, Trump was humiliated and BBC was at the forefront. And now they are bearing the brand of, you know, falsifying information, falsifying, you know, coming up with clips, manipulating them to fit the narrative, you know, taking sentences from one and putting them together and making them a one clip, you know, and then make it seem as if it is a one speech because there was an agenda. So the agenda was to tarnish Trump and to remove him from the scene and to destroy his reputation as much as possible and to deprive him the opportunity to stand again as president. But you know, destiny has its way. In Christianity, we say, when Jesus says yes, no one can say no. So, destiny has its way of rewarding the innocent and vindicating the innocent. And the time for Trump's vindication came. BBC declared to be a false news outlet. So that was a huge blow for the British, you know, Broadcasting Corporation that we know. You know, in those days when we were growing up, people trusted BBC. When something come from BBC, it's the truth. But when, well, people started to be informed and other independent, you know, media outlets sprang forth, people started to have a second opinion, and they started to realize that we need to take what BBC says with a pinch of salt. So that's what happened, because in those days we only depended on BBC and others, but now there are many, many, many news outlets. So the British Prime Minister and the French President and the German, you know, Chancellor now, Friedrich Merz, are pushing, and of course Donald Tusk of Poland and countries like Estonia, especially. They are pushing for a kind of a Europe that should prepare for war. So, even countries like Finland that were once neutral are now, you know, saying, well, we need to prepare for war. And the belief is that NATO is stronger than Russia. That NATO combined, Russia will not stand. Russia will be defeated by NATO. That is the belief. Well, but the but data that is on the ground and reality tells a different story. Because NATO put everything in Ukraine. They put their intelligence there. The Starlink is there to just give the Ukrainian access to satellite imagery on the movement of Russian, you know, troops. And CIA, MI6, you can name all the intelligence organizations of the West, including Japan and South Korea, you know, Australia and Canada. That is the entire West against one country. And when the entire West threw their weight on, you know, behind the Libyan rebels that ousted Gaddafi, it only took them, they started in March 2011, I think. Was it February 2011? From February to October, I think, Libya or Gaddafi was overthrown in October 2011. So from February to October, those are how many months? Almost 7 months fighting Libya. So which means Libya was stronger than Iraq. Libya was stronger than, was more stronger than Iraq. Because Iraq, it only took not even a month to, for the Americans to reach Baghdad. The Americans started in the 20th of March 2003. They started bombing, you know, and they came through Kuwait. The British were at the sea, at the Basra, in Nazaria, especially Basra and Nazaria. Those were the toughest battles that the British have fought. Just like the Americans when they fought in Tikrit and Kirkuk and Mosul. I've been following this war, I've been following this war, how can I say, to the letter. That's all I can tell you, all those towns. But it took from March 20th, by the 1st of April, we were talking about America coming to fight the last battle. That was the battle to capture the Baghdad airport. So, and by May, there was no government in Iraq. The government has been overthrown. Everything was in shambles. So it only took a month.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
So, Iraq was weaker. Libya was very strong. I mean, if you take 7 months fighting NATO, that's a strong country. You know, especially the city of Sirte, you know, that Mkwanilo Ashumbo was talking about, in his 10 minute, I listened to that clip and I listened to it again. I wish I could have an opportunity to sit with Mkwanilo one day and have an interview with him, because I am interested in my area of research is more on culture and history. Culture, history, religion and geopolitics. Those are my area of interest when it comes to research. And I think I find it more intriguing listening to him, you know, narrating some of the historical events. I wish I would be accorded that opportunity to, you know, to sit with Mkwanilwa and just have a conversation, you know, on history, culture, and I think it will be one of the moments that that will be very, you know, how can I say, profound. So if you take a country, if you look at a country that can take 7 months fighting NATO with their brutal, you know, with their brutal combative, you know, combat strategy, if a country could survive 7 months, it took 7 months, and those guys were losing 2 billion per day. 2 billions per day. That's how expensive that war was. They were losing 2 billions per day. The Italians lost two or three of their aircrafts there. A lot of aircrafts were shot down, in fact. You don't hear that. But a lot of aircrafts were shot down. And there was a time the rebels were bogged down. Like it took for 3 good months, 3-4 good months, they moved not an inch. So that's how strong the Libyan army was. That's how strong the Libyan army was. And that's all. In fact, the Libyan generals and including the Minister of Defense, those guys were determined to fight in the defense of their leader and their country. And surprisingly, the people that helped Gaddafi were the minority black, you know, tribes. And the people that turned against Gaddafi were Arabs. Now, if you look at how black people are treated in those countries, they are treated badly. I can tell you that. By Arabs. They are treated badly. In fact, in Iraq, they are even saying there are no more black people. Iraq was full of black people. Because it is believed historically that black people come from Iraq. That's their origin, the original country, Mesopotamia. It was a black civilization. All these, you know, countries of, you know, Mesopotamia, Haran, you know, Nineveh, Shinar, Sodom, Gomorrah, Shittim, all those were black civilizations. So, but the Arabs annihilated almost every black in the Middle East. And they did that in North Africa. You know, countries like Morocco, Tunisia, they don't even regard themselves as black, as Africans. Because everybody is into, almost everyone, the majority of people are light in complexion. And if you are among them and you are black, you go to Morocco or you go to Tunisia, you will come back, you will really know that you came into a wrong, you know, into a wrong place. You will know that you are in the wrong place. So, if you can fight a country, if you can fight NATO and survive for 7 months, you are strong. And Libya was very strong. I've been following. So, 7 months and then overthrown. So now NATO is saying they are stronger than Russia, that they could Russia will not even last. But if you look at data, data that is, you know, in the open source, it will tell you that it will tell you otherwise, that NATO is not as strong as they claim to be. On paper, yes, but not. Compare yourself with China or Russia. NATO will not be strong. Because Russia or China, it's not Iraq or Libya. This is a big country with almost 50% of the world's natural resources. So Russia does not need money for them to produce weapons that much. Maybe they will need money to buy semiconductors. But they have everything. They have titanium, they have cobalt, they have everything that they will need to produce, whether it is a hydrogen bomb or a missile or a plane. So, and that is a country that you think you can challenge. And in fact, there was a meeting in Ramstein when Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer were saying, let's send troops to Russia. The Italian Prime Minister said, look, Russia has 1.3 million soldiers. It's an army of 1.3 million. We don't have such number. How do you think we are going to match up with the Russians? You don't have such number. The active, you know, in fact, according to open source information, the active troops in Britain, they are 75,000. So if Britain has to fight with Russia, it would only take, they will only last a week or a month. Because 75,000, that's a number of, of soldiers that died defending Bakhmut. The number of Ukrainian soldiers that died defending Bakhmut. And that's the size of the entire British army. So the only person that will suffer more losses here is Uncle Sam. If NATO has to be in confrontation with Russia or with China, Uncle Sam is the one that is going to be thrown full force into the battlefield. And Uncle Sam will not want that. Because Uncle Sam wants to make money. So, that's why secretly, the Americans are pressuring Zelensky to say, look, we cannot continue funding you. This war is not going anywhere. You are losing. But the European countries want to continue with the war. The European countries want to continue with the war. They want to continue fighting. But also Trump is caught up because Trump wanted to give Tomahawks to Ukraine. I think he was advised that, look, the Tomahawk missile is complex. That will mean that we are going to be the one to fire those missiles. And that is already a red line. So, that's number one. Number two, the Tomahawk missile might end up somehow in Russian hands. And then, the Russians will study the missile and reverse engineer it. And before you know it, it is in the hands of the Iranians and the Chinese. So that's not the type of weapon you should give to Ukraine. So that's not the type of weapon you want to give to Ukraine, because that's the Tomahawk is nuclear capable. It can carry a nuclear warhead. So it's a strategic standoff. It's both standoff and offensive, you know, weaponry. So women like Kaja Kallas and, you know, Ursula von der Leyen, they really want a war, like a full war. Like, guys, there is no red line. There should not be red lines. Let's just give Ukraine everything. Countries like Estonia, you know. And people don't know how to deal with Uncle Sam can put you into trouble and withdraws. Once Uncle Sam sees that there is no way out, Uncle Sam will withdraw and leave you there. This is what Estonia and Poland don't know, that they will be used as collateral by Western Europe. Because, in fact, Poland is not even important to America the way, you know, Britain or France is. So Poland and Estonia want to put themselves as if they are, you know, they are the backbone of NATO. So even Slovakia, through the previous, you know, administration, they wanted to think that they were the backbone of NATO. And the response from Western Europe and in the United States was different. You know, it was different. So no, guys, calm down. Calm down, calm down. All right, so we will be going for a short break, and then we'll be back to continue with our conversation. We'll look at the plan that Trump or America.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
So, there is a problem. And America wants an exit, but the European wants to continue. America wants an exit, Europe wants a continuity. That war must continue. Well, America is saying, okay, fine, war will continue, but at your cost. You are going to pay for that war. You are going to pay for the war. We are not going to pay for any war. You are going to buy weapons from us. You are going to buy weapons from us, and you are going to use that weapon to send it to send those weapons to Ukraine. But then there is a problem, because war will continue by Europe's will. But Europe is not the one that is fighting. Ukrainian young men are the ones that are forced to go to the battlefield to fight. And they are thrown in there without any, you know, any chance to survive, because the Russians are well trained, but most of the Ukrainian, you know, soldiers are just captured from the street, thrown into the bus, and then taken to the front. Or front line, without any training. So that soldier only has a minute to survive, according to available data. So if that soldier arrives at the battlefield, they only have a minute to survive. If they survive for an hour, they are blessed. So, and there was a U.S. soldier that fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, and he decided to go to Russia. I mean, he decided to go to Ukraine via Poland to go and fight under foreign mercenary. And then he said when he arrived in Western Ukraine, they were now given, you know, all everything. And now they were being taken to Donbas because the guy, because of his experience, he said, no, for me, I don't want a joke of a war. I want serious war. So take me where the battle is the hottest. Oh, yes. Okay. Because by that time, the Russian forces were occupying parts of Kyiv and Izium and Bucha and Kharkov. So they said, no, we're fine. Where the war is brutal is either Mariupol, Lysychansk, and, you know, the Donbas there. We'll take you there. So they took the guy there. And then he said they now met face to face with the Russian army. So he said that according to the story, there were 2,500 and it's only 5 people that were alive. The rest was either injured or killed. And then I was listening to him narrating how. And then he said he fled from there. When he reached Western Ukraine, you know, other people that he fled with, they said, no, we are going to rest. He said, no, I'm not going to rest anywhere here. He fled into Poland, and he made me laugh by saying, apparently in Poland, he was in a hotel and he took a nap, and then he kind of like had a dream of what, of being at the battlefield. He said when he woke up from there, he just took his bag, went to the airport, got a flight back in the US. And he said, look, the Afghanistan and Iraq war was a joke. All those were wars, were not a war, were not war. They were jokes. What I have seen there is something else. It's hell itself. So, he was narrating this on one of those on YouTube. You can go and look it up. So he said what he saw there was hell itself. So it is easy for a politician, like people like Lizzie Graham. You know, Lizzie Graham, you know, say if it is possible, we need even to give Ukraine nuclear. Because people like Lizzie Graham, they don't live in reality. And so as many politicians. Politicians, most of the time, they live in a fantasy. And it is easy for a politician to say, fight, continue fighting. Because him or her is not there. Neither are their children. You know, most of Ukrainian politicians, their children are enjoying themselves in Europe and elsewhere. They are not in Ukraine. But you will hear politicians say, we are going to fight. We are going to fight. But it's somebody's son that is dying there or getting injured. Well, their own children are in safe places. So that's a nasty part about war. It's a nasty part when it comes to war, because somebody else fights for you, and you say we are going to fight, but it's somebody else's son, somebody else's husband, somebody else's father that is dying or getting injured there just because of one or two people's ego. So, and the Slovakian Prime Minister, Robert Fico, said, you know, students were there protesting. No, you are not supporting Ukraine. You are not doing what? So the Prime Minister told them, look, guys, if you really love Ukraine, go to Donbas and fight for Ukraine. So if you really love Ukraine, get in there, sign up, and go to the front. Go and fight for Ukraine if you love Ukraine. So, but Europe is becoming a militant and combative, you know, especially the European Union. They are becoming militant and combative. Well, but at the same time, we also need to know that Ukraine is a sovereign country. And Ukraine has a right to join whatever organization they want. So, that's where it is also unfair, because Ukraine is a sovereign country and they have a right to join NATO if that's what they want. But Russia is saying no NATO near here. Just like America said no influence, not even French influence is allowed in the Western Hemisphere, according to the Monroe, doctrine. The Americans made sure they kick the British out, they kick the French out, and not even their influence is allowed there. There, it's just Uncle Sam and Uncle Sam alone. Now this is where superpower countries become a little bit unfair. Because the world must just be in tune with their interest. If not, then there'll be a war. So all the wars that we have been fighting is superpowers trying to protect their interests. We have a Ukraine war today because Russia wants to make sure NATO does not come near its borders. But does Ukraine have right to join NATO? Yes, because Ukraine is a sovereign country. Does Cuba have right to be allied with China and Russia? Yes. But what does it mean? It means that if Russia comes in Cuba and they set up their standoff systems there, America will be a danger because it's just 30 minutes. And in fact, some of the weaponries will not even be detected. So that is somebody sitting on your nose. And Uncle Sam will not allow that. You know, in 1962, we all, you people that lived that time, you almost faced a nuclear catastrophe, and you, most of you did not even know. You only came to hear about it. Because America set up their nuclear standoff systems in Turkey. And it only takes 30 to 40 minutes from Turkey to launch a nuclear missile there and strike Russia. Then Russia also said, fine. I mean, there's the Soviet Union also set up their own in Cuba. So that was going to be, if the Americans launch in Turkey, the Soviet will launch in Cuba. And it is going to be hell. And luckily, they negotiated. So America withdrew from Turkey and Soviet withdrew from Cuba. That's how the world was saved. So, now, if America brings their nuclear weapons to London, for example, or to Poland, well, the Russians have also sent nuclear weapons to Belarus. That was it last year or 2023? I think it was 2023. The Russians sent nuclear weapons and munitions to Belarus. And now, with a new Oreshnik that is now in service, it is said that Oreshnik has already arrived in Belarus. Because from Belarus to Poland, it will just take a minute for an Oreshnik to hit Poland. Or it will not even take an hour for London to be hit by a nuclear missile from Belarus. And vice versa. So the world is at the mercy of two superpowers. Any miscalculation, any foolish decision from both, you will start to know what fire is.
2017, I went to Rebel Salute. And I bring on a female artist on stage. And tell them, say, this is going to be the next sensation from Jamaica. The biggest sensation going to run Jamaica and run the world. And them say, cockatoo, a fool, a joke. Well, I'm going to tell you something now. Here comes the biggest female sensation out of Jamaica. Original Coffee! Tell them!
Ragamuffin reggae beat, dance all on the street, can't stall no defeat. 2030 we still a do it, every stage show we still a keep, every big song they from repeat. Them a big fun in a them feet, them a clap hand. We get them out to talk in our alta baha, no?
Pull up! Them things are awesome. Show respect, we respect Joe. Nothing can test, tell them Coffee.
Thanks for having me. Big up Butu Bantu every time. Big up Coco T. Yeah, we know. So we say ragamuffin reggae beat, dance all on the street, can't stall nor defeat. 2030 we still a do it, every stage show we still a keep, every big song they pan repeat. Them a respond in them feet, them a clap hand. We give them heart attack in our altar back. Enough style we have, them can't answer that. Me start a track and me start a talk. So what am I gonna do right after that? Me only speak lyrics, not really talk a lot. I know, touchdown like quarterback. I'm a count of the money, give me half of that. Me gonna date for the hype, I'm a rather not. Give me joy for a time and beat. Late don't like white life and street. Music sweet, I just like one cheat. Drop it hotter than island heat. Yeah, me with the island flow. I could have been this and I don't know. Yes, I'm to say I don't grow. Tell them all I'm going to show. I'm kicking like a ball of telly. Yes, I'm a little bit of panatelli. Give me the world of me. I'm going to show you. Me say that I'm a dream, but it's an alley. Give me the rhythm. I chop it, I chop. When we finish, if it's a hit, I drop. No, some of us have a grab up on that. But my name's still on the platform. To us. So we are coming with a force. Blessings we are reaping with course, man. Yeah, hear me? Big up Buju Bantan every time. Big up Coco T. Real legends in other business setting the pace for the younger ones like us. Thanks to everybody for coming out. Welcome home, Buju. Respect Coco T.
Original Cafe.
So that's what we are talking about. We are just trying to understand. So now the 12 point, the 28 point, 28 point peace plan that is being said, and according to news, Zelensky is supposed to have to sign that, to have signed that by the 27th of November. And it's, they are having some of the restrictions that Ukraine should face as part of the, you know, peace plan, to say that Ukraine must not join NATO. So Ukraine must abandon NATO. And NATO must not deploy any troops, jets, any military, you know, equipment that belongs to NATO in Ukraine. And that Ukraine and the West must recognize Donbas, Lugansk, and Crimea as part of Russia. And then the war should freeze in Kherson and Zaporizhia. So whatever part of Zaporizhia that the Russian control, that should be their own control. So everybody freezes at their current line where they are, as far as Kherson and Zaporizhia is concerned. But there is also Dnepropetrovsk. Kharkiv. Because the Russians are about to take the city of Verchansk. So, and also the areas of Sumy, the Sumy region, the Russians have also taken some territories there. So that's where the current front will be frozen. There will be a demilitarized zone. There will be a demilitarized zone that is going to be controlled by the Russians. So those are some of the points that are in the 28 peace plan. 28 points. There's some of them. But then there's a problem. Because, okay, fine, NATO may not deploy troops in Ukraine. But individual countries may, like the European countries, like the British and the French, really want to deploy troops in Ukraine. And this is for the British to be in confrontation with the Russians so that the Americans can have no choice but to fight the war. So the British and the French want to set the American up. You know, they want to set the Americans up for a war with the Russians. So the British know very well that they are not able to face off with the Russians. That's a fact. The British and the French know very well that they are not able to face off with the Russians without American assistance. They know that too well. But they want to set the Americans up for a major war. Because Britain, and this is what most people don't know, Britain Britain, let me even just reserve this point. But you are going to find it out later why I'm reserving this point. But for now, let me reserve it. So the French and the British want to go there in through what they call the coalition of the willing, where they will have around 30,000, soldiers that are going to be there, equipped, well equipped, and there might be a provocation, and then the Russians will be forced to respond. And then when the Russians respond, that is Third World War already. So That is what the British and the French want. And the reason why they want this war is not because they really hate the Russians and they want the Russians destroyed. There's a reason for that. But I'm not going to say it. But Britain and France have a reason for that. They have a reason why they want, they would rather have Third World War. You know, there's a reason for that. And the reason is not economical. It's not an economic reason. It's not that they hate the Russians, that they want to fight with the Russians to the last British or to the last French. There is a reason for that, and I'm going to reserve that reason. Well, it's 26 minutes to 9. 9 o'clock, I'll be out of here, but if you want to be part of the conversation, the number in studio is 083-288-4001. That's a number in studio if you want to be part of the conversation. And I'm telling you, there is a reason why the British and the French, especially, want that war. If there will be any Third World War, the British and French want it. And there is a reason for that. So, but Uncle Sam seems to be using his medulla oblongata. And I don't think America will allow the British or the French to put them at risk of a Third World War. I don't think so. Not under this administration. Maybe under the coming administration, but not under Trump. Because what Trump doesn't want is a war, major war. Trump would rather want, you know, minor wars where he's certain that he can win immediately and get out. That's American style of war. America does not like to waste time with long wars. America is not good at long war. America wants a war where they will just come in like they went into Iraq, 1 month. They were already in Baghdad. So that's what America wants. So, but it is going to be difficult for America to have such hope fighting a major country like Russia. You know, that's why America was quick to end the war between Israel and Iran, because they were already seeing Israel, you know, being decimated. And they could not afford an embarrassment. You know, the Iran and the Israel war was an embarrassment to Israel. Big time. Because it proved the Iron Dome, the David Sling, and all air defense systems, they proved vulnerable. You know, from Iranian missiles and drones. So that was an embarrassing adventure. And America does not want to fight a war where they will be humiliated at the end. When they went into Vietnam, they thought they were going there just to make a cleanup, you know, to assist the French. And the French were battered in Vietnam, really battered. And the Vietnamese wanted a long war. The Americans wanted to win. You know, their strategy was to win. But the Vietnamese, they wanted to wear down. You know, to wear the power down. So that, those are different strategies. So Ukraine goes into Kursk. Last year, they get into Kursk, and the first days were powerful. Ukraine is getting into Kursk. Yeah, but Kursk ended up as an embarrassing adventure to NATO. Because a lot of NATO officials and, you know, military advisors and mercenaries died in Kursk. It was an embarrassment. So I don't think the Americans would want that now under Trump. Yeah, I think Trump wants more. He wants to close deals, like business deals, worth of trillions of dollars, like what they did with the Saudis. The Saudis were saying, no, 600 billion. Say, no, why 600 billion? Come to at least 1.3 trillion. Say, okay, no, we will look into it. We'll look into it. So America, this year alone, has closed the deals that are almost close to $3 trillion. You know? America has closed deals that are even beyond $3 trillion. That's what Trump wants. Trump wants to make money, not to make wars. And if it is war, it is a short war. You know, you just go there quickly, boom, 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 boom. Then you run away. Yeah, we have bombed them. And like Trump, what Trump used to say, we bombed the hell out of them. Yeah, we bombed the hell out of, you know, Yemen, out of the Houthis. We are going to bomb the hell out of you if you continue. That is what Trump wants. To just be threatening here and there. And, I always laugh about the Somalia of 1991. That one was an embarrassment. I always go back to that documentary and I always laugh. That one was an embarrassment because the intelligence sources misinformed the U.S. Army. You know, the U.S. Army was given false information about what was really on the ground in Somalia. So, and when reality, when logistics and plan met reality, the outcome was different. And it was embarrassing. So, America wants, you know, some sort of peace with Russia so that they may focus on fighting, because now China is taking advantage of the situation and China is growing fast, overtaking the U.S. And the U.S. cannot afford that. So they want to stop the Ukraine conflict so that they may face off with China economically, to curtail China, to prevent China from becoming an economic power. But that is too late now, because Europe the problem is not about ending the war. The problem is Europe that has become a thorn in America's flesh. Europe has become a thorn in America's flesh. And I don't think the Americans will overcome this challenge that the British and the rest are putting on them. So, it is difficult. I don't think America will overcome this. The Ukrainian-Russia conflict might stop, but it will not end. Because somebody will provoke a scenario where the other person will respond, will be forced to respond, and there will be renewed fighting. So, it's a challenging. I think that the people that are facing a challenge now is not Russia, it's America. America will be facing a big challenge, and the challenge is not Ukraine alone. A challenge is Europe that is going to use Ukraine to entangle the Americans into a continuous, endless, you know, chaos. And like I said, there is a reason why the Europe, especially Britain and France, are doing that. There is a reason why Britain and France, you know, are doing that. And I'm going to give you a homework to find this out. Why? Why is it like that? What is the reason behind? You will be surprised when you discover, when you find that out. You will be very much you'll be very much surprised. You will be very much surprised when you find that out.
Thank you.
All right. So when we end, we are saying that America might have dug a pit, and I think they might be the ones that are falling in that pit now. And they are not falling in that pit because they're being dragged by anybody else except their allies in Europe. So their European allies are dragging the Americans to fall in the pit that they, you know, dug. They jointly dug. So we are yet to see what the outcome of this 28-point peace plan, whether it is of any tangible, you know, and trustworthy results, or maybe just one of those political drafted documents that will, you know, will go nowhere. But whether or not the peace between Ukraine and Russia is achievable, that is yet to be discovered in few days. You have come late.
Oh, sorry, but that for us, even 1 minute is enough, man. Oh, thank you. Good morning, Dr. Franz. How are you?
Morning.
Okay. I've been listening to you from the beginning. Just that my very apology, but I think it's good to unpack some of these current events, which are very important to us, especially when you mention about boycotting. Now I'm seeing our president coming out. So this unpacking of the G20, when are you perhaps going to, I just have to make a formal request?
The G20 is today, so I think next week.
Yeah,
the G20 meeting is today and tomorrow.
So, yeah, no, this is today and tomorrow is, these are for the now head of state, and all this social summit and the other declaration have been clustered in many areas since last week or 2 weeks ago, I don't know. Last week, actually.
Yeah, we will see the results of the meeting.
The results, we seriously need, I don't know who is going to do that, France, on our behalf, and see how we can appropriate these benefits and opportunities that are coming in order to address our social problems, unemployment, youth, energy, poverty, justice, and all these things, please, my God. I know your climate change is very important, all those dead leaves and all these issues. How are we going to celebrate these things and make sure that our peoples can work collaboration? Because I don't see any room, any other person or platform or radio where we can really seriously discuss these things and see how we can appropriate some of these things in terms of policy, acts, and all these things. Just to have social justice. Because that's what people are talking about. Energy justice. So thank you very much, Dr. France. I know you forgive me. I know there was interruption and it have come a long time ago, but you forgive me. And I'm very appreciative to what you are giving unto us, especially in geopolitics and how America is making a lot of U-turn and things like that. I mean, you can see those historically injustice. Thank you very much, Dr. France.
Thank you very much.
Good.
All right. Yeah, my time is also has also come to a serious halt here, and my apologies for that. We are still around. I'm still around. You know that. I tell my colleagues, some of my colleagues here, and they say, "You see, in Eagle FM, I'm here to stay." So. I'm still around. I'm not planning to go anyway. So our program is still around. In fact, it's one of the oldest programs on Eagle FM right now. You know, it is Radar, it is EMS, Business Zone, Realm of the Historics, Tuma, and the rest. So, we have come to a halt in our program, and we'll meet again next week.